What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Attention to Detail, the podcast. This is episode 7, I believe. I'll make sure I'm straight on that, but I believe episode 7. Another guest on here, my man Yorick Michaels, in Belgium, co-founder of Elite Athletes, which is one hell of a facility, or has one hell of a facility. We're just talking about it off the air, and it's gotten even crazier over the lockdown. So I'll put the link to that. Go check it out. And if you're in Europe, if you're in Belgium, then 100% go check that out. But again, we'll link all that at the end and stuff. Player development guy, just like myself. And also just recently, I saw you got married. So congrats on that as well. Yes, sir. But,
thank you.
Yeah, just introduce yourself, man. Like, I know a good amount of the audience will know who you are, but kind of give a background. Doesn't have to be anything crazy, whole biography, but a little bit about who you were, where you are now, how you got to where you are now, and just whatever you feel like people need to know about you.
Yeah. All right. Cool. So started with the company when I was in college, when I was 19 years old, with my best friend. So always my interest was always skill development, and his interest was always about the athletic development. And we just started talking, and we were like, in Belgium, there's nothing. Like in the States, there are a lot of guys like skills trainers and athletic trainers. And in Belgium and in Europe, I think the market is really open for that. So we were like, fuck it, we're just going to go for it. And we started in the summer messaging players like, can we train you for free? Just give us an opportunity to make you better. And then the first off season, it just went off. We, after 3 weeks, we had so much interest that we said, we want to do some kind of a off season camp. And we had 75 players joining on that point. And then it just took off. We, after 4 years, we had enough money to get our own place. And we started the facility. And then now we're 10 years in the business. We get 3 companies. So we get Elite Athletes. It's a training facility, 24 hours. And then kind of like online platform for players and coaches. And then we have Elite Academy. That's kind of like the European club style. So it's kind of for players between 10 and 21 years old. We're trying to create the ultimate player development program. And then the third companies are EA basketball camps, where we travel the world, do some consulting and camps for other clubs and federations.
Love it. So you said you got started when you were 19. That's pretty similar to myself. I mean, both started pretty early. Both kind of had that interest coming into, you know, like a lot of guys will finish the playing career. And they're like, oh, you know, I'm going to get into training, which is great. Like, that gives you a ton of experience. But how did you get into that space so early? How did you develop that interest so early in your professional career, or like career as a trainer in college, whatever?
Yeah. So it was kind of like with my best friend, we were playing in the same team. And in the summer, we tried out different stuff. So we bought like the jump programs, and then we started training in his garage with some kettlebells and a pull-up bar and things like that. And then we went on the court, and that time it was like, you know, like the Better Basketball DVDs, and we had like Gannon Baker and all like that kind of stuff. So we just looked at what are the guys doing on YouTube, and then we just tried out that kind of stuff. And yeah, we as a young guy, we already had like other people asking like, ah, can we train with you? And then step by step, it just grew. And but to be honest, when we started, we had like no idea about coaching. We were just like, start before you're ready, and just try to learn every day and experiment. Don't be afraid to try new things, and then step by step you learn from other people, and you get better as a coach.
No, I think that especially for coaches listening to this, like, you don't always have to be perfect when you first get started, because I would say both of us would agree with this. Now looking back on what we're doing when we first started, we're like, yo, what the fuck was that? Like, what were we doing? So regardless of where you start, how you start, you're gonna look back and be like, dude, that was bad. So get started. Don't be afraid to go out there and experiment, like you said. I think a lot of guys who have started with that have found a lot of success. All right, so let's talk a little bit on the player development side. Talk about kind of your style there. So everyone, every skills trainer, whatever you want to call it, has a different style of what they do. What are like the main pillars of it? What separates you? What do you do differently or better? Just give kind of some perspective on who you are as a player development coach.
Yeah. So it's kind of like where what I call it is a super six. So the super six for me is like shooting, finishing, creating off the dribble, passing, footwork, and decision making. So those are the six things that I focus on with my workouts. I think just like you, I went through a really big process of, yeah. In the beginning, I was doing a lot of this on-air stuff and just reps and doing different stuff without defenders. And in the beginning, my players, they looked super skilled. Like if you come to my workouts and you see my 15-year-olds, you're like, damn, this guy get NBA packages. And then you come to the games and we were not doing bad, definitely not, but you don't see the same packages coming back from practice to the game, or they have a lot of turnovers, or they do the moves at the wrong time, or their decision making was not great. And so the last years I'm going way more to a games approach. So that means like I try to add defenders almost from scratch and then build up. And I feel like right now the transfer rate from practice to the game is way higher. Yes, players get a little bit less reps, but every rep is different, and every rep you add decision making to it. And I think that's kind of like the new way of training skill development. Is I think not a lot of coaches like us, they got it already to add the games to it. I think too many coaches do way too much on-air stuff. But no, that's definitely my approach. Is I want to add the decision-making factor to practices.
Yeah, no, I love it. I think that decision-making is kind of the underlier for everything. Because like you said, you could be the best shooter in the world. You can have the best handles in the world in a workout. And those are good to have as a foundation, but without adding in those decision-making processes in a workout, in training, or having them playing a bunch of games, all of those are pretty much obsolete without that kind of underlying factor. So talk a little bit about, let's say you're a coach listening to this, trainer, or even a player, how can you get started with that kind of games approach and implementing more live defense, live situations into your workouts?
Yeah, so I think the key is you want to create advantages and disadvantages. So that means, for example, I can do the same drills with my guys mini basket than I do with pros, but it just you add different loads to it. So that's being creative. You need to become really creative in how can I make it a little bit easier for the offensive player to make the right reads. And then we add a lot of things, like, for example, what we call guided defense. So guided defense means, for example, the defender has to give three options, and then the offensive player needs to read what of the three options it is. And then that's still not very game-like, but then what we add to it, I like to call it guided life. So guided life means the defender gives one of the three options. Once the offensive player makes the right read, then we're live. So you create the advantage, for example, let's say on the catch and the defender gives a straight line towards the basket. As soon as the ball drops on the floor, now we're live. So that's a lot of stuff that we do is trying to add that guided defense. And then, for example, with different loads can be, you give them more time. For example, a longer closeout. It can be defender starts on your hip. It can be defender starts behind you or whatever. So yeah, that's something we try to add. And then I try to go for like 60% success rate. So you try to get as much good reps as possible. And for example, we just had a camp, and I had like one guy, he's our next prospect. He's gonna go to one of the top schools in America next year. And for example, all the other guys are like 3-4 years younger. So then for him, I try to make it different, like adding different constraints to it. For example, you can only play one-on-one with two dribbles. We give him a different start. I add an extra defender in help side for when he catches the ball, things like that. So you, even between your players, you can make adjustments and make it easier or harder for them depending on their level or their age group. Yeah. It's not easy. It's you got to be creative as a coach, but I think that way you get the most out of every player in your practice.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think I like what you said about being able to scale it to different skill levels, because a lot of the time there will be like a middle schooler playing with one of the top high schoolers in the city. Now, if those two are doing the same drills on air or whatever, that skill level is so, there's such a disparity in skill level that you're either going to be over challenging the younger guy or less skilled guy, or mm-hmm. under challenging the older, more skilled guy. And adding in these constraints and individualizing the constraints, like you said, even just an extra defender, maybe a shorter closeout for a defender on a more skilled player. There's so much creativity that goes into it, but it allows you to do so much and really get back to actually making decisions. And one thing that I've started doing the last couple of weeks is, instead of thinking, all right, how many reps did we get up? Like how many, let's say we got 200 shots up. It's like, all right, how many decisions have we made in the last workout or the last week? And that's where like, I feel like there's way more transfer there. Even shooting drills can be decision-based, like contested mm-hmm. shooting drills. And the more we get towards, we talk all the time about making stuff game-like. Mm-hmm. And the easiest way to make stuff game-like is to add in a defender or add in some constraints, advantages, disadvantages. But it really, really does take creativity. So I like what you said about that.
The drill you said about the contested shooting, like you showed in one of your videos, I like that a lot.
So, yeah, yeah.
We do those drills. We stole that from you. We do that a lot, and we try to build and get more out of it. And also something that's really cool is what I'm experimenting a lot with from the summer is, what if the entire practice is one game? So for example, what I do is we get this chalk wall. So, and this practice starts, I wrote down all the names on the wall.
Yeah.
And from the first rep, every score is a point. So for example, we start with some of these contested shooting drills, and you make it super easy, and then you load it up. But then from minute one to the end, it's immediately competition, and your guy is going to be locked in.
Oh, yeah.
If you get them like 3 minutes taking like sloppy shots and the other guy is locked in, they're 10 points behind at the first 5 minutes of practice. Yes. And then we have this wall where we said king of the court. And then if you win a practice in the end, you get one stripe behind your name. And that has done a lot for us. Like every practice is so intense. They're so motivated. They're getting the most out of it, because as soon as you make a competition, all your guys gonna be locked in from the start for sure.
No, I'm using that. I'm 100. You stole that shooting drill. I'm stealing that.
Because that's good.
It just drives so much engagement. Like just being able to compete, being able to have guys who are, they're playing for something, and it's easy. Like you can't blame a player when they come in and they're just, if you're not implementing a competitive nature, like, you can't blame them for going through the motions, but you don't have to sit there and be like, go harder, go harder, go harder. You just be like, yo, look at the scoreboard, you're down 5. Like, what are you going to do? And then that just drives so much engagement right there. So I'm stealing that 100% sure. all right. So let's talk about, we mentioned that we're going to kind of refer to this in this episode. So the European kind of style of basketball. As Americans, we love to sit here over here and not research it, but just talk about what the Europeans do. And a lot of players in Europe have seen a ton of success from the systems over there. but we never really look, or the majority of Americans never really look into what's actually going on over there. So someone who is over there, talk a little bit about what you guys do differently, what makes European basketball different from what we do over here.
Yeah. I think the biggest difference for us is we make way more decisions on the catch. So what I feel is like with the American guys who come over from college, who I train in here, they're way more athletic. A lot of the times they're one-on-one way stronger than the European players. But they struggle a lot with the system because our system is based like you make a decision almost before you catch it. So it's like 0 second decisions. And it's not like you catch the ball, you do like two dribbles in place, or you do like double jab, you come back. That coaches don't want to see that in here. And that I would say is the biggest difference. Also, we try to create more scoring opportunities from triggers. So like ball screens or whatever, or like down screens or whatever. Any or get actions, and well, always an action. And I think in the States you see a lot more creating out of one-on-one situations, and we try to create the advantage on before we catch the ball instead of when we catch the ball. So you see less one-on-ones in here. What I do feel also like a big difference is Europe get way less athletic players. Like if you see a guy in here playing in his senior year and he just goes up and do a normal one-handed dunk, everybody jumps up because it's like, yeah. Oh, this guy just did a dunk, you know? And and we look at these high school mixtapes and we see some guy do a 360 between the legs in high school and we're like, holy shit, there's not a single guy in Europe who can do that, you know? So that's, I think, a big difference. Yeah, I do would say a lot of the European players, they're very smart because they need to learn to play with the triggers and the actions a lot. And we focus a lot on shooting. I think it's getting more now in the States also. But for example, a lot of our games with our under 18 last year, we took more three-pointers and two-pointers, and it's normal. If we play a transition, and it's a 2-versus-1 situation, we pull up for that three. We're not going for the layup. So yeah, of course, in here also we get the shot clock 24 seconds, and then if you get an offensive rebound, 14 seconds. So we need to play faster, and we get the shot clock already from when we're under 14. Wow. So the development is a little bit different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's crazy about the shot clock. Cause I'm down here in Florida, so like growing up in DC area, like we always had a shot clock. It was 30 seconds though, so it's still a little bit slower than the European style. But coming down here to Florida, no high schools have a shot clock. So if you're up by 6 points with 7 minutes left, you can hold the ball for the game. And it's like, what is that doing? And I had this, not an argument, but a conversation with somebody on Twitter the other day where we're like, oh, shot clock, we don't need it, I'm against it, whatever. I can't remember the exact reason, but I was like, dude, I've talked to at least 5-6 college players from down here, and they're like, yo, this style of play is so fast. And that's college. That's not even a 24-second shot clock. So
yeah,
it definitely speeds up the game, and it's where the game is going. It's moving into a faster game. Like, this is why players are scoring. You see random players scoring 40 points because there's so many – more possessions. Yeah. I think the shot clock really helps breed that in a lot of ways. So it's good to hear that you guys have it, you know, even at 14 years old to kind of get that going.
Yeah. And also in practice, we use it a lot. We do like 8-second shot clocks. So to make it even faster. So yeah, I think if you can add a shot clock to your practices, it's going to help your kids develop a lot better.
No, yeah. It changes a lot. And another thing about the kind of European style is some of the overseas guys that I've worked with, they'll come back or I'll talk to them and they'll be like, yo, this style of play is completely different. Like the ISO ball, you're not doing it. Like, it'll happen here and there, but you're not just on that kind of, so pros over here are like ISO, creating shots off the dribble, you know, the typical like Devin Booker yep. style play. Yep. That's what everyone trains for. They get over there and they get a closeout and they hold the ball and take a retreat dribble and they're like, oh shit, this is not a style of play. So let's say talking to a player who is kind of has overseas in their vision, what qualities do players need to play in that European style of play at the professional level?
I would say you got to become amazing in attacking closeouts, because that's what you see at the highest level at every offense. It's, we try to create an advantage, and then the rotations are so good. So you're never going to get an open layup or a dunk, or almost never in traffic. So it's almost every time they skip the ball outside, weak side, and then you have that long or short distance closeout against you. So it's a lot of shooting under pressure, or then getting something done in with one or two dribbles. But literally, if I train guys right here, for example, 2 years ago, I had an American guy, and he came like 3 days a week to train extra, and his coach called me and he said, I don't want you to do anything with more than one dribble in practice, because he's not even going to be able to do two dribbles. So that's a little bit of extreme, but yeah, he was just standing in the corner and then catch and shoot, or maybe one dribble pull up, but that was pretty much it. I think one thing on the downside in Europe versus in the US is we try to put everyone in a box, you know, like they take away a lot of creativity, or they say like one guy can use a lot of kinds of point guard. He can be creative, but the other guys, you just need to do the actions. And if you're open, you shoot it. If you're not open, you pass it. But I think it's less fun to watch games in here than you see in the US.
Yeah. I guess unless you're like a San Antonio Spurs, you love watching ball movement system, but I mean, most people like watching athletes and Kyrie Irving being creative. I definitely get that. So let's talk about, let's say the average 16-year-old. I know it's a little bit different in Europe. It's mostly like clubs, isn't it? Like here, 16-year-old plays on their high school, they'll play AAU here and there like during the summer. But in Europe, it's primarily separated from the schools, right?
Yeah, that's correct. So I think that the bad side in here is the education system is not very sports based. So that means, for example, like kids, they're in school from like 8:30 till 5, something like that. And then they go home, they still have a lot of homework. And then you go to a club and train two times, maybe three. For us, we train four times, but there are not a lot of clubs who train four times a week. But you have very limited time with the players because, yeah, there's so much other stuff. And you don't see any athletes who almost combine two sports because it's just not possible in here. So I think that we're not very living in a sport-minded culture in here. It's more education. And that's a little bit, on down. But on the other end, the season is much longer. We have like a 8-month season. And then, off season, of course, after that. So in that way, it's a little bit better. But there is nothing like AAU or anything like that. You just stay with your club the entire year.
Yes. And do you ever see it changing from being like, or at least towards a more kind of sport dominant mind, not dominant, but sport-based mindset?
Yeah, there are some schools, like for example, now we had a deal with the school and we're the first one to do it in here, is we can give sessions before school so the kids can come early. So that's already something, but it's not like it's integrated into the school system. You see, you need to find the gaps in between. But yeah, the bad side is like if kids travel 45 minutes to school and they need to be there at 7, then their sleep goes away. So it's everything has a downside also, you know.
Definitely. And then do most players stay with that same club throughout their childhood, or is it like good jumping around here and there?
No, I think lately you see more guys who are like jumping around, but the system is based that you only have 1 month a year where you can change clubs. So really? It's only in May. So it's not easy. You need to find the time. You need to be perfect. But yeah, for us, for example, like each year, maybe one or two players switch, but not more than that.
No, that's probably good. It's probably good to have that continuity where you can just work with the same guys. And because I think one thing development wise here is like, hey, you really just, there's no development because you get different guys every week almost. So like, you're not going to work long-term with the guy. That's why most coaches on the AAU side of things, they don't even try to develop players because they know that they're going to be gone in a month, or they could be gone. Yeah. So I think having that continuity throughout childhood could be huge if that was kind of the emphasis here. Was like, all right, stay with your team so you can really develop, work with a group of players, become close to them, and kind of learn how to play on a team and not just as individuals. So that's definitely a benefit from the European side.
Yeah, I think with AAU, the problem is also like the time you have your off season and you can really get better on a personal level. Now you're just going to play 5-on-5. And 5-on-5 is great, but it should be a plus and not only it, because now, yeah, it takes away your development.
Yeah.
It's, yeah, you're not going to get a whole lot better by just playing 5-on-5 games.
No, yeah, exactly. And I think the one thing people will say is like, oh, but what about the games approach? Like, you guys love playing games, but the thing I always say is like, one, if you're only playing 5-on-5, mathematically you get the ball, 10% of the game?
Mm-hmm.
I think that kind of relates back to the games approach we were talking about earlier, is getting players in live situations more than 10% in an hour and a half game, because then they're running up and down, they're wasting all their energy, and only to make probably 20, 30 decisions with the ball.
Yeah, true.
So I think that's where, if we cut out maybe on the American side, like 3 weekends of 5-on-5 games and put them in more games approach style training, then that would just improve. Over the course of 10 years of a player's development, that would just give them so much of an advantage over the guys who are just only playing 5-on-5. So that's an interesting point.
True.
All right, let's talk a little bit about your facility. So you said you got it started 4 years after you started up training. So that was 10 years ago that you opened up?
Yeah, something like that, 6 years ago. Yeah.
Shit, so you've been having it running for a little while. How'd you get that started? And then how have you kind of developed it to keep it growing and growing? Because I see that it is still to this day living, breathing. Like, you're not just being like, oh, this is good enough. Like, you are developing it every year. So how'd you get it started, and then how have you progressed it from the
So like, in the first of all, like in Belgium or even in Europe, I think something like this just doesn't exist. Like, there are no guys doing something on their own and make a living out of basketball. So it was not easy. But when we got the building, it was kind of like a garage for old timers. So we had at least all these fancy cars in here. And then actually, like, step by step, we were able to get a little bit more space and get some strength equipment and stuff like that. But for me, it was like, yes, it's a basketball gym, but I want it to be way more than basketball. I want it to be, the building itself should change your life. You understand? Like, it's a mindset changer. So for example, everywhere where you look in the gym, you're going to see quotes, but you're going to have like typical basketball quotes about working hard, but it's also going to have a lot of, if you're a little bit away from the court and you have like some seating area or in the locker room, whatever, you're going to see more quotes about life and like creative quotes from Walt Disney or things like that, or Albert Einstein. But my idea is, like, if you spend so much time in here, like, those codes going to be in your head and they're going to form some kind of a path in the way kids can live their life. And so we do small things like that. And then the second thing is I want this to be a second home for our players. So all our kids, they get a key of the gym. So it's kind of like they have a golden key, and that gives them 24/7 access. So first of all, I want my guys to, if you want to play this, you can play, but I don't want to just make them like get in and get out. I think it's basketball is about friendship. Basketball is about community, about a brotherhood. So I want to give them all the tools to do that. So the best thing, for example, I think that we did in the last year is create this NBA 2K PlayStation corner. And after practice, the guys are always playing, and you have two guys playing, but you have eight guys watching, and they're always yelling and they're laughing, and it creates a brotherhood. So we do small things like that. And then right now we're trying to get upstairs renovated. So I want to do like this individual locker room. Like in the States, it's normal. In Belgium, no one got it. So they all get their own closet. But we want to do like a mini golf in the middle of the locker room so the guys can have fun after practice and things like that. We're going to add nap corners. So if they come from school or they want to stay in the weekend longer, like the whole day or something, like they can get some beds and take some rest. Then we add the ice tub. So every 2 weeks we're gonna do a session for recovery. But also those things, they create a brotherhood, they create a family, and that's, for me, that's very important. Like I want to do more than just develop the players. I want to give them the best youth experience that they have, and yeah, help them become grown men. And if they have a dream in basketball, I'm gonna do everything to make it accomplished. But if they have a dream outside basketball, we should have given them the tools to be successful in life for that part also. So that's a little bit the idea of our building. Yeah,
I love it. So you kind of live it out through the facility, but how else would you say that you kind of build that brotherhood? So whether it's on the court, off the court, like from a coaching standpoint, how do you and your staff kind of breed that? Because you hear it all the time, like coaches want teams to be like a brotherhood or like family, like, oh, we're family, but they don't actually go the full length to kind of live it out. So how do you do that from a coaching perspective?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing I learned from that is from Duke. I don't know if you saw it, but on YouTube, there's like a documentary about like the brotherhood from Duke. And the biggest thing that Coach K says, like the first month of like before the season starts, they don't do anything about basketball. Really? But they do like a barbecue. They do a trip. They do they go to the movies together. They have some veteran players or some NBA players come and talk to them. And they try to create a lot of activities for the guys. And I think that's kind of like, that's even more important to start the brotherhood. You create a brotherhood off the court, not on the court. If it's off the court, right, it's going to click on the court. But it has to start off the court first. So we do a lot of team building activities. We have something now like EA Cares. It's kind of like we do some volunteer work. But all the guys mixed. So I always try to mix the guys. So for example, today at camp, we have our under 14 on the court, and then I let my under 18 guys join. But instead of just being an assistant and just standing there and coach a little bit, I let them join the practice. So I let them team up with the young guys, and they can share some knowledge. We give them some responsibility. The young guys, they look up to the older guys. The older guys, they feel responsibility, and they try to help out the young guys. So things like that, I think, is very important. And also, like, I think the way you handle your players, you get the best coach is a coach who truly really gets to know your players and create an in-depth relationship with them. So we try to be really personal, and yeah, we also have a lot of fun. We have like a ping pong table in here, and we do coaches versus players and things like that. And those are small things, but it's super important in the long run to create that bond.
For sure. So what's next? What do you see as like the next steps, both for you and for everything you have going on?
Yeah. So my ultimate dream is that I want to create the most unique sports gym in the world. So I want to totally rethink the way a gym should look. So like small things, like, for example, why do you have to sit on a chair if you watch a game? Like, why can't you be like swinging or laying down? Or why is it not like super comfortable to watch a game? Or, for example, if you're a father and you watch your son play, why don't you have like bikes where you get, they can cycle at the same time so they can sport when their kid is playing? Things like that. I want to create the most inspirational environment, or like things. Once the game is done, why don't you have like a pond outside where you can just all get in and then get into the sauna and get some nature also into the program and in next to the building? And yeah, just totally rethink the way a gym should look and feel like. So that's the ultimate goal. Of course, then we're talking about a bigger budget, so it's not easy, but I really think we can nail it, but it's going to take some time. I think second is we really want to nail this academy program and yeah, make it better. And we get a lot of good prospects, and they're dreaming, for example, like in here, kids, they're all dreaming of going to the US. So I think if we can set up a program like that and help them reach their goals and their dreams, that would be, yeah, that would be amazing. Yeah, still lots of dreams, but it's step by step. It's a process. Yeah,
for sure, bro. That's fucking awesome. I love how outside the box you're thinking. And that's definitely kind of an inspiration for me, and I'm sure others who kind of get boxed in. I think we as coaches sometimes get boxed in, like you said. Nobody really thinks to be swinging while they're watching a game or be on a bike while they're watching a kid play. So that's awesome. Definitely inspiration for me and a lot of people. And I'm excited to see it come together for you. So I appreciate you joining me. We'll definitely talk a lot in the future, because I think our views kind of align a lot on the training side of things. So I'll be bouncing ideas off of you, and you always feel free to do the same. And I'm sure I got to get over there at some point for sure to check everything.
Yeah, for sure.
That'd be awesome to see just different culture and what you guys got going on over there as well. So thanks, man. Appreciate you.
All right, cool.